Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of November, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things you choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. How do so many people get hacked? Apparently, many of them don't give much thought to choosing their passwords. That's according to the 6th annual analysis of personal password habits. Guess what the report's introduction asks? Passwords are still really bad.
It's the same password for everything.
Yeah.
How bad? Here are the top 5 passwords for personal accounts, according to the analysis.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
That's right. That's number one.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is number two. Number three is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So number four is
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
No. Password. Password.
I've seen a couple of those lists where we're pretty high on the list is effing password.
Yep. Number five is QWERTY123. And for corporate accounts, the top five are, and you've heard these before.
Yeah.
Back on the top five list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, a new one, secret, and then password. It takes less than a second to crack any of these 10 passwords, and it's an insult to any decent hacker. The company reviewed and analyzed a 2.5 terabyte database extracted from public sources, including those on the dark web. Data were organized by country of origin, covering 44 countries, and were separated by corporate and personal credentials by the use of related email addresses. Tips for stronger passwords include all the things we've been telling you for years. Making a lengthy password that steers clear of easily guessed information, such as birthdays, names, and common words. Users should never reuse passwords on different sites. Ahem. Password managers can also protect passwords without requiring the user to memorize dozens of complex passwords, since they only need one password to log on to the password manager itself. And letting your password make really long, complex passwords for you takes the onus off of you. There's just no excuse anymore. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is your password stinks. And the choices are, yeah, but I can actually remember it. I only use it on 3 or 4 sites. Nobody wants my stuff. And pass what now? So far, we've got 25 votes. And yeah, but I can actually remember it is just ahead of pass what now. And of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. And of course, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Well, that's what we've been saying, though. You know, you even ask your students, you know, well, I don't have much information. You know, what would they want me? I don't have much to offer. Yes, you do.
Yeah,
you have a name, an address, a birthday, and you're a person.
And,
they can take out credit cards.
And you have an IP address.
Yeah.
So for the two of you said nobody wants my stuff, you need to understand that you have at least the things that Dave said. And if you don't have those, you've got an IP address that they can attack someone else from, and it gets blamed on you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can hide their identity by using yours.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is so easy to use a password manager.
And pass makes it so
frappant. Well, the problem is, people look at that, but you know, the people who keep a book, a notebook of 200 passwords.
And you look at a generated password and go, oh my goodness, I'll never remember that.
Well, more
that's the point.
More importantly, they look at those 200 passwords and they think, it's going to take me hours to put those in.
Yep.
What they forget is most of those are old passwords that every time they try them, they don't work, and yet they never cross them out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you, and it takes an afternoon, and I get that. But one afternoon versus losing your bank account, I think is worth it.
Or just going through the hassle of trying to remember which password on which sheet of paper is the current one, because you've put post-it notes on top of post-it notes over the original notes, and you don't know which one is correct.
Yep. Yep. It's sheets of paper. I've been at business desks where somebody pulls out three or four sheets of paper and says, try this one, try this one, try this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not that one. Throw it away. Well, I might need it. No, throw it away!
No, because it might be for something else.
Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
That too.
I don't know what this is a password to. Well, it's not to this. So write that on the paper.
Well, that's why what I recommend to folks is getting NPass.
Yep.
And you also need a pad and pencil. And what you do is you have that sit beside your computer. And every time you go to a different site and say it's the first time doing it, write it down on that pad and then immediately go over to NPass and enter it. So it's not forgotten. I don't care if you're not going to use that website right away. Just in case, you can have it generate one hell of a password.
See that? I do it differently from you. What I do is when I go to a new website, I immediately open up NPass.
Oh, mine's always
open. I put
open
the information in there and say, okay, generate me a password. And I get a password that's 100 characters long.
No, the reason.
And I don't have to remember it. So I copy it, I paste it, I'm done.
Well,
and I never have to worry about it again because it's on my computer, it's on my laptop, it's on my phone, it's in my head probably somewhere. Well, it's not my head, but it's easy to do it that way, and you never have to think about a password again.
Yeah, it just makes life, and you can make them so darn complex, and you're sitting there, no way in hell are, you know, you're going to have to remember all those characters, upper, lower case, special punctuation, and combination
numbers
of lower and upper letters and phrases and everything else that it uses, because that's what NPass does automatically for you.
One crazy thing I've heard of that talked about on Security Now, people don't even bother writing their password down. They don't bother password manager. They just mash on the keys. And when they go to log back in again, they say forgot password. It emails them a link. They log back in. And it says create new password. They just mash on the keys. Every time they log in, they go through the forgot password link and send it to your email. So that means
that is so annoying.
Mm-hmm. And that also means that your email password is very, 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 very important.
Right.
It is anyway, because you know I can break into your Amazon account if I get your email because I say forgot password and it emails me.
Yep.
So you really, really don't want to have your password broken into. We had a customer this week and came in, and someone in India got her password from the NPT breach, because it said she said they sent a picture of her driver's license and social security, because that was all in the NPT breach.
Right.
Within a couple hours, they had rung up $1,000 of payments on her Apple account.
Oh yeah, it just takes seconds.
My thought was, wow, that's all?
Well, yeah, but
the bad guys usually max your card out.
But here's the problem: is your can you if somebody hits my bank card, I just tell my bank that's not me. They don't charge me, and I get a new card.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true on Apple?
We've heard stories from Apple that if you just cancel your card, or you
freeze it.
Well, no, you cancel the fraudulent card and you get a new card, because that's usually what they do by default. When the company sends a chargeback to return the item that was fraudulently purchased, Apple has been known to freeze your Apple ID. Because people have done that intentionally as a scam. I buy this $50 game and then say, oh, that was fraudulent, and get your $50 back after you've already got the game. But the trick is, and it's a little sneaky, but we all know, well, we know about it. People might. Anything you buy from the app stores, probably the same on Google too, is the account you bought the program on is embedded in that software you buy.
Right.
And so if you bought something and then it was returned and you got your money back, the store knows that. You try to launch the app again. It checks to make sure. It's like a subscription in that way. It checks to make sure you're still subscribed, and if you're not, it won't let you run.
Right. Right. But look.
So too many chargebacks is bad. So we started going to Apple and said, this is fraud, this is fraud, this is fraud, this is fraud. And in the midst of all that was the real iCloud storage payment. So that was tricky.
One thing I've liked that my card now does, and I set up, I could turn it off, but anytime a charge goes to my charge card, I get a text message that says, oh, this just showed up. Just to alert me. And it's like, yeah, I just came out of the diner, and yeah, that's okay. Sometimes anything else, it ain't.
Sometimes I get that in seconds. Sometimes it takes an hour to come through.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
But again, a password manager will make your life so much easier in the long run and so much more secure.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, you say nobody wants my stuff. Bots don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Bots are going to steal your information and give it to somebody. And think about what's on your computer. Do you keep your credit card information on your computer? Do you keep your household budget on your computer? Do you keep information about your bank on your computer?
Yeah, different account numbers.
Any of that stuff that you have on your computer is fair game for them, because if they can get into your computer, they will suck out every single thing they can. And if you use a lousy password, you're just making it easy for them. We get people all the time. My bank, somebody stole, thousands of dollars out of my bank account. Okay, what was your bank password? 123456. Okay.
Yeah.
I can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
And
can you help me get my money back? No. Go to the bank.
Where else did you use that password? Oh, I used the same password on Facebook. Well, that's probably where they got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tried your account, and it's the same password.
There are billions of passwords that have been breached and now known to the bad guys.
Right.
In fact, more known to the bad guys than to the good guys, because not all the breaches are public yet. And so somebody looks at those password lists. Oh, I'm going to try that on Amazon. I'll try that on PayPal. I'll try that on Citibank. And they know people reuse their passwords, and suddenly all of your accounts are compromised, and they get all the money they can from every account.
Right.
Every day at work right now, it just seems like the past 2 months, I am having so many folks come up to me, and they're going to do a return. And I say, I don't know if this is going to work, because my account was breached, and they had to send me a new card.
Well, and that's if they're telling the truth. There's so much retail return fraud we run into all the time. Well, I bought this somewhere else, and I don't want it anymore. Can I return it with you? No. First, no. And second, no.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean,
so, and one other thing that you can do with NPass, which I really love, is they can do a password audit. So you can say, has this pass, find me all the passwords I used that have been pwned, that have been stolen, right? Then find me all the passwords that are weak.
Yep.
Find me all the passwords that are identical across my thing. So they use this password 15 times. Well, there's 14 passwords I got to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then find the ones that are 3 years old, over 3 years old, 1 to 3 years old, 6 to 12 months old, 3 to 6 months old. So, you can change them if you feel that there was a breach 3 months ago. Okay, every password over 3 months old needs to be changed.
Yep.
And it makes it so easy. So easy.
I just got notice of a new breach that happened in February, but it wasn't made public until now, when the bad guys started selling the information. So, and this one was targeted at corporate users. But the bad guys had my information for, 9 months without me knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what they did in those 9 months.
Right.
That was the demand to science by Pure Incubation. Two companies I've never heard of. Why do they have my information?
Right.
Because they bought it from somebody else.
So, I just opened up EnPass, and there's an update available. So, not a bad idea to check.
Yeah.
And some of them are sneaky. You remember the Zeus banking Trojan? So that would get into your computer, and when you logged into your bank, it watched you. So it had a list of banks it knew about. It sent your credentials back to the bad guy, who then started draining your account. But the banking Trojan intercepted the withdrawals, and on your screen it displayed all the money. So
nice.
It was rewriting your banking page to show you everything was fine, there were no withdrawals, and you had all your money. That was pretty good.
That's tricky.
That's actually kind of impressive.
Yeah. And there's a similar one that a lot of our customers have gotten hit by and have called, where, in fact, that's in the Beekeeper, they talk about it too, there's a mistake. They accidentally gave you a $5,000 credit instead of a $50 credit they were promising. Without you realizing it, they took $5,000 out of your savings account and transferred it to your checking account because they're already in your computer watching what you're doing. And so they tell you to go to the post office or go get a $5,000 money order and mail it to us because you wouldn't want me to get fired, right? Before they even realize that it's their own money that got transferred from a different account. And it wasn't an accidental deposit from the fake customer service agent you called.
Well, just at our store, I mean, I had two people come in this week with these fake coupons.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, you're a winner, from my company's name. And to call this number to claim your prize. And two folks printed it off and brought it in. And both of them, different times, said, is this for real? Or is it a scam? I go, what do you think? It's a scam.
At least they didn't demand it was real. So there's several fake scams going around for the large home improvement stores.
Right.
Yeah, the orange one and the blue one.
Yep, that's where I've seen them.
And I get three or four a day. And I've read stories about people taking one of these fake coupons in and demanding the free gift. So, well, no, it's a scam. Or earlier it was Bill Gates personally was going to give you a free iPhone.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Why would Bill Gates from Microsoft give you an Apple device?
Yeah,
right. Well, I got one the other day from Marvel. Marvel Rewards. So Marvel Comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you won. Mm-hmm. Okay, first, I didn't enter a contest.
Yep.
Okay, that's first.
I won the Italian National Lottery once.
Congratulations!
Never been to
it. Wow! Molto bene.
Yeah.
And I, I knew I hadn't entered any contest. And then you look at the address it came from, and it wasn't Marvel Comics, Marvel.com or Marvel.
Yeah.
It wasn't Marvel anything. So I knew it was a scam. But, there's that moment where you think, great, because they were showing you all these things you could win, giant dolls of the characters and mm-hmm. Thor's hammer and, all this other $5,000, all this other stuff. Just call us and we'll tell you what you won. Well, if you know it's me, just tell me what I want.
Yeah.
Yep.
The idea is, of course, if they get you to call.
It's only $1,000 processing fee to get your $50,000 prize.
Exactly.
Send us a money order.
If they get you to call, there's a much better chance they can scam you.
Yep.
Well, I had last week a call from Wells Fargo saying, we've been checking on accounts and yours has been hit. Okay. I had a Wells Fargo account, but that was over a decade ago.
Yeah.
haven't had, and you know, that particular thing was paid off, never had a card, and they're trying to tell me, you know, they went into this lengthy, mm-hmm. but yes, your account's been breached and you're going to be charged. I forget the amount. And it's like, so you should call right now.
Some old database got discovered and breached. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So I just, yep, no.
Did you hear about the misprint from the Wicked musical?
Yes! Okay, so the Wicked, which was a stage play, and by the way, an excellent stage play.
It's coming out November 22nd.
Right, it's
a movie.
It's
yeah.
a movie now.
Yep.
And they had a link to the movie's website.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the movie's website is wickedmovie.com. And the URL they posted goes to a porn site.
Oh! Well,
it's an adult movie company.
Well, yes.
Yeah, so it's close.
Yeah, close.
And I bet there's a parody of this movie on that site.
If there wasn't, there will be.
Yeah.
I'll never forget.
Yep.
I was just opening up the front part of my new shop when I was down on Brighton Henrietta Townline Road. And Judine, my old office manager, was getting things set up. And we got her computer all set up, you know, nice big screen and that. And she goes, it was right around the holidays. She goes, oh, well, I got to look up some stuff during my lunch to, do some Christmas shopping. And she wanted to get her husband some sneakers. So she types in Dick's.
Be careful going to sporting goods stores.
That's a problem.
We were in the back part of the shop and we heard such a loud scream. They could hear it down the whole row of shops.
Well, I can't tell you how many times I get a call from my faculty. There's something wrong with the internet. They went to whitehouse.gov, but instead they typed in whitehouse.com, which now redirects to whitehouse.gov, but used to be a porn site where they had lookalikes of various political characters doing things that various political characters but don't want people to know they do.
Now it's an election betting site.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, where you can bet on the election. It's crazy.
But yeah, I can't tell you how many calls I got.
Most companies have had to register misspellings of their own name so that, you know, you spell it wrong and you get to the right place. In fact, there was a big case years ago where a guy had bought a bunch of domains relating to Disney characters.
Oh.
And they were able to arrest him under child porn laws because he was targeting children with Disney characters. And then Disney went and made sure they bought, you know, MickeyMouse.com and DonaldDuck.com and all of those URLs now, yeah.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I missed Nick.com by one day. Nickelodeon bought it.
Mm.
And I could have had it legitimately because Nick is my name.
Yeah.
They could not have sued me for it. They would have had to buy it from me. Doggone it. One day.
Dang.
December 5th, 1996.
Yep. Yep. That was December 6th.
Yeah.
1996.
What was it? There was a restaurant in town that had a big Oscar party all the time.
Oh, yes.
And the Oscars sued them because they had their name was Oscar.
Yep.
So they brought in the boxer, Oscar De La Hoya.
Yep.
To buy part of the restaurant so they can have an owner named Oscar.
Yep, exactly right.
But it's a different industry. No, it's just, and that was the same industry.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. But we'll be right back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Everybody get up and then sit down again.
Yeah.
Because welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. We've got 32 votes in the poll already. So far, Pass What Now is just ahead of Yeah, But I Can Actually Remember It. Last week, and this continues to befuddle and amuse me, last week we had 188 votes in the poll. Clearly, telling people there's a problem with the poll gets votes.
So you should say that there's a problem now? We want to check out the problem?
Yeah, there's a problem with the poll, so check it out. There's just
Well, we want to verify that the problem that we were having last week is now corrected.
That's exactly right. But last week you had people from Brazil and Great Britain and Turkey and Ukraine.
Can you tell if those were VPNs?
No, I don't bother with it. All I record is this name of the city. And that's
which
that's
you get
all
from the
because
IP
I
address.
Don't want right because I don't and we it don't. Could be incorrect. So if for example you live in a rural area, it'll actually show the city nearest to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get that in our store when someone does the Apple two-factor, you get a map showing where you're logging in from.
Right.
It used to say Canandaigua. Okay, that's pretty close to Victor. That must be where our internet comes up. The last few weeks, it's been saying New York City. So the other end of our internet has
bouncing
moved.
You all over the place.
Yeah. So that scares some people.
Right.
Because, you know, we're not in New York City. And when I'm setting up their new computer and they start getting notices on their other devices.
Right.
I just have to make sure to call. Yep, that was me. I need the code.
Well, and that's the other problem. People call up and say, I need your help with setting this up. Okay, you and I are going to have some lengthy conversations. So, no, you and I are going to have a very large number of very small conversations.
Yep. Well, that's the thing also right now with the password managers. Like we've said right up front, yeah, it takes some time to set it up, that you got to be willing to do it. And what you need to do, since the weather is getting nasty, you know, it's quite cold.
Perfect time to sit down.
Sit down. You're inside anyways. Take the time to start sorting through that massive list and crossed out, or you think it might be this and not checked to the. Take some time and go through them all, write them down, and then start putting them into a product like, say, NPass. So they're all in one place, and then you can throw out that notepad that had all the crossouts and everything else, and it'll take it, you know, a weekend. You could have it all set up, and your life is going to be a lot smoother because NPass just runs down in the toolbar, and it's there. You can click on a site, and it'll say, oh, do you want to use the NPass from NPass? You just click it. It'll pop all that information in there, and away you go. And they're long, complex passwords.
Right. At the very least, what you want to do is for your because every password has been breached.
Mm-hmm.
For your major products.
Things that have
like
mail behind them.
Bank and your mail. Like that.
Things that have money behind them.
What you want to do is change the password. Install NPass. Go to the site. Change the password. Use your old password. Log in. Let NPass create a 100-character password. And use that.
The NIST has backed down a little bit on the change your password every 90 days. The idea is that if someone gets your password, you should change it. So 90 days was the first guess, 30 years ago.
Right.
What if they got your password 89 days ago? Well, then you should change your password every day. Well, what if they got it this morning? Well, then you should change your password every hour. That's what two-factor is.
Right.
Every login, your password changes. Because you have to put that two-factor code in.
So let's before we get to the phones, and Fred, please hold on, be patient. Before we get to the phones, let me get this piece in. Every single email address you have is probably the backup to some login.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I forgot my password at Amazon. Oh, it goes over to here.
What it happens if that email address is also hacked? So you need a secondary email address backing up your primary email address, and it wouldn't hurt to have a tertiary one backing up your secondary one. And if you don't set all that up, you will get hacked, and it will be a problem for you.
Mm-hmm.
That honestly, that happened to me with Facebook. I didn't have a secondary password, and my Facebook got hacked. And mostly I was thinking, I don't care about Facebook. But then I realized that over the years, most of the people I communicate with, I talk to on a daily basis over Facebook. We get together, but I talk to them every day on Facebook.
Yep.
And it took me, it was just, I can't tell you the hoops I had to jump through.
Google's the same way. If you don't have recovery information in your Google account, you are probably not going to get back in.
That's exactly right.
Well, I had to start all over again, too, because my original password that the
Facebook
was set up with was when I had the company opened, and it was on Jerry's old server. I didn't remember it.
The email address has changed.
Right.
It's a little easier now because people are keeping their email addresses. And when you change cell phones, you usually can keep your phone number. But we run into customers all the time that, well, that email, I haven't used that email address in 20 years. Or I haven't, that was my landline from 30 years ago. Well, that's what you told Google, so that's what it's going to ask for to prove that this is your account.
Well, one thing I like to do is try, wherever I can, to use my Google Voice phone number, because that's never going to change.
I've seen sites not accept that.
Exactly. That's a problem. And that makes me angry, because it's a phone number that will never change. No matter what happens to my phone, no matter what happens to Verizon, I will have my Google Voice number. All right, to the phones. Speaking of which, our first caller, hopefully patiently waiting on the line, is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, checking in with you guys. I did not vote in the poll because none of the options are fitting. I have event pass. I have 160-some passwords saved. The only one I have to remember is the one for NPass.
Yep.
Yep.
And on my phone, that is my thumbprint or fingerprint or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You can use biometrics.
Yep.
With your phone, actually, with any device that will accept biometrics.
Mm-hmm.
So, a number of laptops over the years had fingerprint readers, and you could use those if you have one of those.
Yep.
So, yeah, excellent, excellent, Fred.
So, yeah, that's the NPass has just been marvelous. I am miffed or even astonished that some places, websites, or stores, or don't allow you a longer password.
No, that makes me insane.
When they say 8 characters, they mean 8 characters.
Yeah.
And when you, when I've tried to put in something, and it, all the, it seems like it took, and then it says, when I try to use it to back up to see that it actually is correct, and that I have it correct, it said the wrong password, or I put in a, they'll say, do the forgot password thing, and it says I don't have a account with that email address.
Yep.
Right.
And then I end up calling them and kind of getting maybe a little snarky, because their website never said that it had to be a limited number.
That's the thing that makes me the most crazy.
If they truncate it without telling you.
It's after you try to put one in that they tell you, oh no, 16 characters is the maximum. Well, screw you. You should have told me that before I typed in the password.
Well, I've had ones that don't even tell you that there's a problem with your password that you're putting in.
Yeah.
It just didn't work.
Right, right, right.
Because it only saved the first 10, so the 16 characters you type are obviously wrong.
Right.
Yeah. But it doesn't tell you that,
Or what special characters you can use or can't use.
Right.
You know, that part is just...
Why is your password Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Fred Astaire, Albany? Well, because it said I had to do 3 characters and a capital.
Right.
But yeah, it's, that's good information. And I don't know if you have on your website a link to information on how to do that backup of your email.
I may not. That's a good point.
I've used a family member's email as my backup.
Yeah, a lot of times if you have a spouse, you can do that. But
something happens. I have more than one email address, but if something happens and family member needs to access something to because everything is in from the email.
Yep.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to. So I give it to a family member to be the one with the burden of taking care of all that.
Right. Well, and that's another really interesting thing that you can do with NPass. So, for example, both my wife and my daughter have access to my NPass. So if and when, something happens to me, they have the master password for NPass, and they will then have all the up-to-date information for everything I do.
Same here.
That's just giving them that one NPass, password.
Right.
Yeah, that works too. My family member also has that.
Right. And of course, the first thing my daughter said was, "Wait, you mean I can get into your bank account?" Oh, that was a mistake.
Well, I've put my daughter as a co-signer on at least one of my banks. So
yep.
Yeah, she can have access without anything. She can walk in the bank and show her ID. And
Apple and Google have legacy contact setups,
right?
Where you can put in a legacy contact, so if you pass, then that legacy person can get to it. Microsoft doesn't. They require a death certificate.
Yeah,
and it's a pain to try to get someone into someone's Microsoft account, and so everyone should do that. Not just older people, because you're wrong. You get hit by a bus. Everyone should have a legacy contact set up just in case.
So from my perspective, Microsoft can keep any of it.
Yeah, right.
Nobody will be looking for it, because the only two things I use Microsoft for are both my work apps, and my work has access to that.
Yep.
When my son was young, he used my Microsoft account to buy his Xbox games.
Right.
And we have found no way to separate his Xbox games from my work stuff under the same email address. So if he wants to keep his Xbox games.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, good info, Fred. Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Have fun.
Bye.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But I have now written down creating backup recovery passwords.
It's slightly different for each email service, but generally you go to your email account and you can make an alias.
Right.
And that points back to the original account. Or what you should actually do is make a brand new account. Steve@gmail, I should have Steve2@gmail.
Right. and Gmail accounts are free. Go ahead and make all the ones you want.
There is a inactivity timeout. Is it 2 years?
2 years.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you want to do is set a reminder for yourself in your calendar. You carry around a calendar all day long. Use it.
Yep. And you can set that.
It says, in a year, at once a year, go in and send yourself an email and go look at it.
And you can set that backup account to auto forward any email to your main account.
Right.
Then you end up getting twice the spam, but
right.
Actually, when you set up a brand new account, you may have a couple of weeks where you get no spam until the bad guys find that.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
One thing I got to share, we were talking about banks and all that and stupid stuff. Well, when my wife's card got hacked, we got to do, call the bank right away. So I called the number on the back of the card.
Yep.
I had the number, at least off the website, rather. I didn't have the card on me. So I said, because it was upstairs. I'll be honest, I wanted to be lazy. So it said, all right, well, if you don't have your card on you, go ahead and put in your Social Security number. All right, now we need your birthday. All right, just for reassurance, please enter the last four digits of your credit card. I don't have the darn thing.
That I told you three questions ago I don't have.
And I pointed that out to the bank, and she goes, and this is bank manager. She goes, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
She goes, I got to look into that. She goes, that's the dumbest thing I've heard. Yeah.
I the last credit card I have, the one that got hacked, I had memorized. This one, my brain will not memorize it because it knows at some point it's going to get hacked. I'm going to get a new one anyway.
But you still know the old one.
And I still know the old one, but I don't know the new one.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hello, guys. Green lights coming into my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find out, without much success, what kind of a router. I have a modem router that does 800, whatever it is, megabytes or whatever, and I'm getting the green light. I'm signed up for the 500.
Yeah.
Will it work on a modem router, or do I have to buy a router, or do I have to buy a router that is green light compatible?
Okay, so what you get from green light is an ONT, an optical network terminal, and it connects the optical green light fiber cable and gives you a plain old everyday Ethernet jack.
Which functions equivalently as the modem you have now from your current company.
Right. So you can do one of two things. You can plug a device, a single device, so one computer, if that's what you have, into the ONT itself. Or you can plug your own router into the ONT. But it has to have a WLAN connection, not just from the coax out to Ethernet, but from another Ethernet out to Ethernet. So all the normal routers that you buy everywhere else will do that. I don't know which router you have your current provider.
If you have a modem router combination where coax goes in and Ethernet comes out, that won't work.
Right.
Okay, that's what I've got.
Yeah. Now, virtually any white router will work. Greenlight does have a list of recommended routers. I'm going to post that in a second.
Oh, I couldn't find that.
but Steve's going to post it in just a couple minutes.
Yeah, Amazon had four that they recommended.
Yeah, but, well, take a look at you know, cross-reference both lists, see what you like.
I still like the Orbi. That was so easy to set up.
Well, for me, the Orbi was great until it died, and then I got the Google one, the 3-router mesh network, which now covers my entire house without any lapses in
service. Yeah, I got the Orbi down in the basement, and then I got a satellite up in the bedroom, and that covers even outside.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had a lot of good luck with Eero.
Eero's also very good.
We were scared when Amazon bought them.
Yeah.
But so far, they've still been pretty good.
Yeah.
You don't have to link your Amazon account to them if you don't want to.
Right.
The one neat thing I like about the Eero is it allows remote administration. So every company I've set up, I can be an administrator and manage their network.
Right.
So that's usually something only in higher-end routers. Or you have to open the WAN port on your router, which is
bad. The one thing I don't like about the Google routers is you can only manage them from the phone app.
Yeah, Eero the same way. That makes it easier for average people.
But I'm a geek, and I want something better.
Okay, the next question is, I've got to get a new router because mine is a modem router. Is there a big difference between a $100 router and a $200 router?
Well, facetiously, yes, $100. but generally speaking, any router that does the speed you need should be okay. The question is, how high-end are the components? And how long will they last?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a router, the theory is you don't turn it on and off very often. So if it works on day one, it's going to keep working on day 200. You know, so what kills electronic devices is keeping moving parts running all the time. There are no moving parts in a router.
Power spikes.
And power spikes when you turn them on and off. You turn the router on once and you leave it on for 5 years. So theoretically, at least, unless they've used really, really, really lousy components, the $100 router will last you as long as the $200 router.
What the difference often is extra management tools. So, for example, you've got younger children. You can tell your router to turn off their device at 8 o'clock to make them go to bed.
That was the evil laugh.
Yeah. Well, I had that on my son when he was young, and it was always, Dad, I need 10 more minutes. So I'd give him 10 more minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, Greenlight has started renting you your own a Wi-Fi themselves, which is interesting because that was one of the things they never did before, is they just give you internet and you do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, but they want $15 a month.
Right. So it's usually easier to and cheaper in the long run to buy your own.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that was good Nokia information. I want to thank you guys.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Bill.
All right.
One of the things to keep in mind, too, is the $100 router might do 500 megabit, and the $200 router might do 1,000.
Yeah.
Right, but so, and that's why I said they do the same speed.
Yeah, if you're going to grow into it.
Right.
So a lot of people, in fact, for a lot of you that are still using Time Warner Cable or Spectrum Cable, I can't stop saying Time Warner.
I understand.
It was 30 years.
Right.
If you're using Spectrum Cable Internet, they have increased the standard speed to 500 megabit. Thank you, competition from Greenlight and
exactly.
Verizon Fios. So
they could have given us that 30 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you have an old, so you may need to turn off your modem and turn it back on again to so it gets the faster speed. But if you have an older modem that just been sitting in the basement for 10 years, you may still only get the 100 out of it.
Right. Right.
And so you'll look at replacing your modem. Spectrum's a little better than Time Warner used to be in the fact that the modem now is included in your monthly bill. You don't pay extra for that. You do pay extra for Spectrum Wi-Fi. So again, like Greenlight, you get the modem with your service. You can buy your own Wi-Fi to save that monthly bill.
Right.
So if you haven't got a new modem in a while, go to speedtest.net and see what kind of speeds you're getting. You should be pushing 500 megabits, so 480, 490.
Right.
And if you're not, you probably need to replace your Spectrum modem because it's old.
Right. The older a modem is, the less likely it is to do the high-end speeds, the high speeds. And, I bought gigabit routers these days are cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I'm getting 500 meg. And I have a gigabit router. Oh, okay. I can grow now.
Yep.
I can grow into that. If I decide I've got to have gigabit Ethernet, I'm good to go on the router. And the router and the gigabit router didn't cost me a whole lot more than a 500 megabit router would have.
Yep. Crazy thing is we only get 100 here in the school.
Yeah.
And that used to be fast.
Well, exactly.
Mm-hmm. We're coming up on what used to be Cyber Monday. Because everyone would go to work when they had fast internet. Nowadays, your home internet is probably faster than work internet.
Probably.
But they still do Cyber Monday
deals.
Less
crowded anyway.
Yeah.
Steve had a good point. Speed, what is it?
Speedtest.net.
Speedtest.net.
There is a one specifically inside of Spectrum. I'm going to post that link, which gives you better, more accurate results.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I use the speed test on the Greenlight, directly to Greenlight.
Yep.
I also use it to RIT. It's faster to RIT. and not the download is the same, but the upload is faster to RIT, which is weird.
Yeah. The Spectrum is also going symmetrical, like Greenlight is.
Right, right, right. And I get symmetrical on at RIT, and I only get less than that at... At Greenlight itself, it must be their upload. Their server is not accepting uploads as fast as they're serving downloads. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is in the history books. But do not despair for those of you who don't read. There's a whole other hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole other hour of Dave Enright. A whole other hour of Steve Ray. And a whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco. And of course, a whole nother hour of you. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Stay tuned because when we come back, we're going to talk about the lounge, which has been gone for a couple of weeks. and I have an update. But in the meantime, take a quick bio break, but don't go too far, because we're going to be back at Jazz 90.1 with a whole lot more soundbites. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And very important announcement, the lounge is back, baby. So all you lounge lizards can join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in the... Oh, did I set the page up? That's a very good question. Maybe I have to go and set the page back up. Yes. Hello. Where's my page? There it is. Yep. Page is not set up, so I'll have to remember to do that.
Nope, not today. Nope. Technically correct.
Technically correct.
But it does say back-end issues.
Right. We were having back-end issues. Everything has been resolved. The lounge is back up. You may use it tomorrow night at 9 p.m., assuming I actually remember to fix the page so you can get to it. And we will be there from 9 to 10. It is a video chat, much like Zoom or any of those others. You do not have to use your camera, of course. You can just lurk and listen. You can ask questions. You can join in the, I think it's fair to say, free-ranging, freewheeling discussion.
Not too many computer questions.
not a lot of computer questions, but a lot of discussion. And we do that every Sunday night at 9 p.m., except for when it's down. And if you are a member of Ask Nick, and if you're not, I don't know why you're not, we do it also Wednesday nights at 9 p.m., and that will be back as well. So I have both of those to fix. So I suppose I better put those on my to-do list. Because if I don't...
You'll forget.
Fix lounge pages.
There are 2,724 things on your to-do list. Where would you like to place this?
Exactly right. Well, I use a program called My Tiny To-Do. And it's a website, so it's a web page, and I put it on my website. And it allows you to do everything, and it's great. So I have currently 12 tasks on my website. I have 5 3D prints I have to do for my wife and daughter. And
honey, I have to get a second 3D printer. You're just giving me too much work.
Well, the problem is the new 3D printer I have is 6 times faster than the old one, and she knows that. I have 5 books to read because I read voraciously, and I don't watch much television, so I have 63 movies and television shows to watch, which I'm probably never, ever going to get through. Plus, there's all the things for Mastermind Lounge and for Ask Nick, and I have one tab labeled Someday.
Well, you got to see The Beekeeper, though, right?
I did see The Beekeeper. It was excellent.
Supposedly, they're coming out with Beekeeper 2.
I'm sure they are. Any movie that makes money gets a 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, we were speaking of routers. Good segue. Thank you, Bill, for that segue. If you own a D-Link router, listen up. Tens of thousands of exposed D-Link routers that have reached their end of life are vulnerable to a critical security risk that allows an unauthenticated remote attacker to change any user's password and take complete control of the device. In an advisory on Tuesday, D-Link announced that it won't fix the issue and recommends retiring and replacing D-Link devices that have reached end of life or end of service. So let me translate that. There's a flaw in our routers. They're old. We don't care about you. Buy a new router. Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
There are 7 flaws that have been discovered so far. Almost all of them immediately give the hacker complete and total access to your entire network, which means that they're that much closer to hacking into any of your devices. Those of you with smart home devices are particularly vulnerable, since many of them have poor or no security. In addition, active exploits are now being launched against not just the end-of-life routers, but also the end-of-life D-Link network-attached storage, or NAS, devices. The attack started after D-Link said last Friday that it wouldn't fix the security flaw because it only impacts end-of-life NAS models, warning customers to retire affected devices or upgrade them to newer products again. Threat actors immediately took notice and started targeting vulnerabilities on Monday. There's a shock. According to D-Link, typically, and I quote, typically, D-Link cannot resolve device or firmware issues for those products since all development and customer support have ceased. D-Link strongly recommends retiring these products and cautions that further use may be risky to connected devices. If U.S. consumers continue to use these devices against D-Link's recommendation, please ensure the device has the latest firmware, end quote. That won't really help much, but it can't hurt. If you can't replace the affected device with a model that the vendor still supports, you should at least restrict remote access and set very secure access passwords. You're using a password manager, right? D-Link has a PDF on its website of end-of-life products. Be warned that it takes a while to load. It's 97 pages. 97 pages of no longer supported D-Link routers.
And some of them went out of support last month.
Right. We'll put a link on, to it on our website in a bit. And so how's your router and NAS security? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
What's a way to drive up sales, though?
Exactly. Exactly. This is, yeah, we've abandoned you.
Yeah. Sort of like Microsoft.
Right.
Leave you out, you know, hanging out to dry, and it's like, oh, too well, too bad if you were using our product and relied on it. We're no longer supporting it. Goodbye.
The problem becomes, how long do you make them support it? 5 years, 10 years, 50 years?
No, I understand it, so from their point of view. I absolutely do.
It has to stop eventually.
But they were not polite
about it. Yeah,
about it. You know, basically their answer is, screw you, you're out of service. It would have been nice to say, I'm sorry, but we really can't continue to support 25-year-old products. Please buy a new router. We're sorry you have to do this, but it's the way the world works. Okay, that would have been nicer.
A little more user-friendly.
A little more user-friendly. But the reality is that they're right. You really need to worry about your router first, because that's the thing that faces the internet where all the bad guys are.
And that can be one of the big differences between the super cheap routers. You can get a router for $20.
Right.
It will never be updated. Every router, just like every program, has bugs, and those bugs need to get fixed. If your router manufacturer never updates it, you're susceptible from day one.
Right.
So it does make some difference about going with a name brand router that you know is going to update it for a while. I was trying to look at what D-Link's life cycle is, because at least Microsoft says when their stuff is going to go out of support. I haven't found one at D-Link yet.
Except for that.
Yeah, right. But it doesn't have their current list and when the support ends.
Right.
Just the ones that are out of
support. Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Right. But assume that things are going to go out of service. If you've had a product for more than 5 years, it is quite likely that you're done in terms of service. Also, by the way, check all of your devices. We talk about updating your computer, but you need to update your router. You need to update your printer.
In your router, though, you go over to there's usually a tab there that you can check to see if the firmware, it'll go out and check see if there's any updates and automatically do it. It only takes minutes.
A lot of the newer routers are also doing auto updates.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Enterprise people hate that because they don't want things updating without their knowledge. But as a home user, I have so many routers I administer that it's like every day I get a new notice that suddenly, oh, this one updated. And at least with the ones I use, the update time is between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m., so it doesn't affect most of my clients.
Right.
Although you'd have to set yours to the middle of the day because you work all night, right?
Exactly right. I'm on the computer until 3 in the morning. So, but yeah, and my Google router does auto updating, and that's, again, as you say, both good and bad. Good for the home user, bad for somebody like me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Scott?
Well, I was checking for the speed of my phone. Actually, I did it on the phone. I first did it on a router here in Canandaigua. It's a Spectrum router, and the speed test said 400 megabytes.
Yes.
Although it said upload 11 megabytes.
Right.
I checked the Spectrum speed test, and it said 200 megabytes. Instead of 400, it said 200 megabytes.
It's not uncommon.
I didn't understand that.
Well, it's not uncommon for your local Wi-Fi network to be much faster than the cellular network. They talk about how fast... LTE Wi-Fi, whatever it is, cellular service
is,
supposedly can do, you know, 500 megabit, but only if you're 6 inches from the tower.
Right. So what it likely is happening, Scott?
Yeah.
What is likely happening is that when you tested it on the phone, you tested it at the cellular network, which would be 400 megabit.
No, I tested it through my Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
both of them through the Wi-Fi.
Are you sure? Because the only way to be sure on your phone is to turn off your cellular connection.
And then to test cellular, you turn off Wi-Fi and leave cellular on.
Right.
And the other thing too is wireless is almost always slower than wired. You check mm-hmm. the wired connection at the router with a wired computer. It's going to be faster than that as well.
Right. And what device you're using is important as well. So, for example, I've got a fairly new laptop that does 420, I think it is, megabits per second when I do a speed test. And I've got a much older laptop that does like 200 megabits per second.
Yeah. And wow. And it is...
I had an iPhone 14.
Yeah, that might only be Wi-Fi 6, maybe 5, I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah. And the difference in upload and download is very common, because normally you only upload a little tiny thing, the text of a website you're going to, so it doesn't need to be very fast, and the download is what downloads the whole website, so that wants to be fast. What many companies have started doing is going to symmetrical. We've talked about that before. So you get 500 up and 500 down. You only need fast upload if you're running a server. And most of the residential internet services have a little clause in there that you won't run a server.
Mm-hmm.
And there's almost no need to run a web server, run a mail server on your own computer anymore.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, if you're going to get an accurate reading of each thing on your phone, then you need to turn off the other radio before you do the test. Right? So in other words, in order to test Wi-Fi, you turn off the cellular radio, and then to test cellular, you turn off the Wi-Fi radio. So that it doesn't accidentally use the other one.
Hey, upload, I was interested because I'm going to have to using my laptop, about 100 megabytes of stuff. And I was worried about how long it's going to take me to do that with 11.1.
Right. Do a secondary test and use a different server. Do a speed test and use a different server. Because like I said, I get different upload numbers when I use the Greenlight server or use RIT. RIT is 3 times faster in uploads. The download speed is almost identical. Is identical. You're always going to get some variation.
Okay.
But the download speed is identical from both sites. But the upload speed from at RIT is 2.5 times faster than the upload speed from the Greenlight server.
And I when I upload the Soundbites podcast, which is 70-80 megabytes, when I had Spectrum Internet, it was like 5 minutes, maybe 10. The first time I did an upload after I got Greenlight, and it didn't even put up a progress bar. I thought something was wrong. And then, oh, I've got 500 up. Yeah, that's instant.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, try a different server and make sure when you're using your phone, you turn off the other radio.
I'll see if Greenlight comes to Canandaigua.
Well, the city of Canandaigua has its own fiber service running through the city, and there are several ISPs that offer fiber service directly. I think there's a couple of places where the city does them themselves, but they usually leave it up to an actual vendor after they ran municipal fiber. So there's a lot of complaints in some cities where the city put in fiber and then the city started offering internet. The internet companies, you know, complained restraint of trade, and the courts basically said, yeah, you can't do that. So right. So if Rochester put in their own fiber, then you know, Frontier and Spectrum would lose money. Well, we can't have that, can we?
No, can't have that.
Yeah.
Even though it would be a really nice income source for the city.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Thanks, Scott.
All right.
Sorry. Were we done? I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
In fact, what's interesting is the city of Rochester does have internet service. I haven't looked lately, but they had partnered with Frontier, and so you get 5 minutes free. So it was often listed on the free internet lists. The city of Rochester gives you free internet. You get 5 minutes free, so you can log into your Frontier account so that it can prove you pay for Frontier wireless in order to get the city's wireless. So that never really worked very well. If you didn't already have a Frontier account, you couldn't use it. And then Spectrum does the same thing. A lot of places, in fact, they often don't make it very clear, but when you put a Spectrum Wi-Fi access point especially in your business, they create a secondary address that they broadcast to the public. So if the someone pays for Spectrum internet, they can basically leech off your internet service.
And that's lovely.
If they're close to you. Most of the cable companies have done that so that they can offer wider.
So has Amazon. They had that sidewalk, Amazon sidewalk, whatever they called it, where your Alaska device would be a hotspot.
Yeah. But theoretically, that was so that your mailbox smart device would know when the mail came.
Theoretically,
because that's how far it reached.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Jim?
Hey, some of the folks were talking about losing their cards and not knowing what the numbers were when they tried to straighten things out. Here's my daughter's suggestion, and we're going to share it with you and the rest of the world. We just take a picture with our phone, both sides of the card, make sure you can read it good, and now you've got it. You can store it anywhere on your computer, or if you trust it to be just on your phone, that's up to you. And there you go.
That's a good thing. We run into that issue a lot with customers in our stores, and we sell computers, generally expensive. So it's out of pattern for a lot of people. So quite frequently it gets hit as fraud protection. Well, just call the number on the back of your card. If you don't have your card with you, then you can't report it as fraud.
Right. That is one of the issues with having your credit cards in your phone.
Yeah.
Although
most of the time you get a picture of the front, but not the back.
Right. The front doesn't have a phone. It doesn't have your credit card number on it. You can also do the same thing if you use something like Google Keep. By just putting that information into a Google Keep card.
Yep. So you know the phone number you're supposed to call, and you know your card number they're going to ask you about.
Right. And the phone number is equally important. So don't just put the credit card number. Put the phone number as well. Good point, Jim. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's
they're doing also. There's an app now you can download your license.
Yeah, some
right. You can do that in your
some states have done digital licensing so that you can have your license in your digital wallet like you can a credit card.
Yep,
right.
So I fix one and fix one and break the other. Sorry, anyone that has motion issues.
All right. Oh, let me remind you, for those of you who tune in only for the second hour, because you just don't have the stamina, the lounge is back. So all you lounge lizards, I will fix the page when I get home.
Do I have to wear a leisure suit?
Yes, and you have to call yourself Larry.
Yep.
So all you lounge lizards can join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in the lounge. It's a standard video chat, but you do not have to turn on your camera if you don't want to. You don't have to talk if you don't want to. You can just lurk. And apologize to all the people watching on video.
Well, now it's upside down on Dave.
Or not. Maybe that's more fun for you. I don't know which. You're looking up Dave's nose at this point. But, yeah, so good camera, by the way. To live through all that. Where was I? Oh, yeah, the lounge is back. So tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, we'd love to have people. We should tell people the lounge is broken again. So we need people to
complain.
Please, yeah. If people come to the lounge just to prove that it's still working for them in their area. So, yeah, the lounge is back. And that means that both tomorrow night at 9 p.m., and Wednesday night for anybody who's a member of Ask Nick. And if you're not a member, I don't know why you're not a member. It's inexpensive and it's easy and it's fast and it's all kinds of things. So go do it, for heaven's sake.
You can get the full Nick.
You get the full Nick, exactly right. You can't have enough Nick, and so that's useful. Also, by the way, yesterday was the anniversary, the birthday of the microprocessor.
Mm-hmm.
On that date, in 1971, Microsoft introduced the first microprocessor. And then we got
Microsoft.
IBM.
Intel.
Intel.
Yeah.
What did I? Well, geez and crackers.
Or was it TI?
I need to go lie down now. Intel introduced the first microprocessor. We had, the first... the first one that everybody really used was the 8080.
A 4-bit
right
CPU.
The 4040.
For $60.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
And
equivalent to $450 today.
Exactly. And we used the 8-bit 8080 was the one that was in a lot of computers.
Yep.
Zilog made the Z80. The 8080 ran at 2 megahertz, not gigahertz. Megahertz, and the Zilog ran at a whopping 4 megahertz, twice as fast. Holy moly, it was a blazer.
Mm-hmm.
You got up to a full 16 meg of RAM, often 8, but 16 was the Cadillac in those days.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's an article from IEEE Spectrum that says MOS created the first semiconductor in 1960.
Right. But it wasn't the first microprocessor, general purpose microprocessor that could be used to build computers.
It had 100 logic gates in it.
A whole 100. Now there's at least 2 commas in the number.
Yeah, billions.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that was an anniversary for those of you old enough to remember those days when, you could get an Osborne 1 or a K-Pro, you were cruising. You had that 25-pound briefcase that was a full-blown computer.
Yep. goes by too fast.
And the first work at home started.
Right, right. And they fit under an airplane seat, so you can take them on a trip. Before that, there was the S-100 bus with the North Stars and the M-size and all of those CPM machines, which both K-Pro and the Osborne 1 were as well. And then that upstart Microsoft MS-DOS nonsense came along. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Lifespan. And we'll be hearing from the folks at Lifespan. So that'll be very exciting. And so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far. Take a quick little break. But it's only just a couple of minutes, so don't get too crazy. We will see you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi there. I'm Nick Francesco for Sound Bites here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Today we're talking with Dan Lyon, fraud and scams program manager for Upstate Elder Abuse Center at Lifespan of Greater Rochester, Inc. Dan, welcome and thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, Nick, for having Lifespan on your program. It's a pleasure to be here in Jazz 90.1 talking about scams today.
And let's jump right into the question, tech support scams. And this is a topic near and dear to my heart. They're everywhere these days. Are there tips on how to spot them?
Absolutely. Let's start right off with the type of tech support that many people get. And maybe sometimes people don't realize that was a tech support phishing attempt, and that is when they're on their device, whatever it be, you know, a computer such as a laptop, a desktop, could be their cell phone, maybe an iPad. Their device all of a sudden stops working, freezes. Somewhere upon their screen, they're seeing the words "scam." Not necessarily scam, but it's going to say, you know, you might have viruses, you may have malware. And, of course, shortly after receiving this message, you're going to receive a phone number, and it's asking you to call a tech support at Microsoft. And this phone number of tech support service is, you know, an 888 phone number. It looks like a legitimate number. They're claiming to be from Microsoft. And your device isn't working, so you happen to pick up your cell phone and call the number which was provided to you on whatever device you're using. That's your fatal mistake right there. That phone number provided to you is not Microsoft. Let it be known, Microsoft in 1 million years will never be reaching out to you asking you to call them for any type of support. So when you call that number, that person on the opposite end of the phone, of course, is an imposter. And he or she will tell you immediately, of course you're calling Microsoft Tech Support. Of course we're here to help you, and we can't wait to help you, but we need something from you in order to do such. They'll go on to explain that wherever you are currently sitting, they are not. So they need what we call remote access. And this is when they're going to direct your attention to your email. And they're going to ask for your email to send you a link. So you go to your email. They're talking you through this on the phone. You get on your email. Look, lo and behold, here's an email from what looks like Microsoft, but it's not. Again, that was all smoke and mirrors. It's a fake website. Ask you to click a link, and now it's fast support or any support. There's many different
remote access. Any viewer, team viewer.
Exactly. And now once you click on it, Nick, they have access to your computer and can see what's on your computer. So certainly, first and foremost, how do we avoid this? How do I not get involved? Certainly, we are not ever calling any phone number that's provided to us, sent to us on any screen. That's a scam. And realize that if you do, and someone gets into your computer, I want people to understand why they're calling you and why they're going to want remote access. Because they're going to do something they're not going to tell you they're going to do. And one of the first things is not stealing your passwords, you know, not stealing your bank account information. One of the very first things they're going to do once they have access to your device, turn on your camera. And why? Well, we learned in grade school, a picture is worth a thousand words. The scammer wants to see what they're saying and what they're explaining to you if you are ramped up, excited, stressed, and full of anxiety. They can see this based upon your facial features on the screen. Now they know they got you. They're going to explain shortly thereafter, your computer screen will go black for a period of time while they're working in the background. And this is, of course, when they are, in fact, downloading and moving banking information, passwords, you know, making transfers of your bank accounts and stealing your info. So how do we not get involved at all in this? Next time anyone has their screen read virus or malware, and a phone number pop up, I do not want you to do anything other than one thing. Turn the device off by doing what's called a hard shut off. Now, the hard shut off is simply pushing down on your power button, holding it firmly down until your screen completely powers off. You think you're done. You are not. I want you to get up. I want you to step away from your device, laptop, desktop, you know, whatever it is you're using, even a phone, set it down. Now go take a walk. Go get a drink. You know, get outside for some fresh air for 15 minutes. Bottom line is I need that device to shut off completely, and that takes about 10 minutes or so. Allow the device to run through every single window processing system within it to shut completely off. Now return to your device. 15 minutes later, power it back up, and lo and behold, the scammer has now been totally disconnected from the blast that they sent to your device. And now you're free to use your computer, and you'll notice, wow, your mouse works again. Everything is free and clear. However, let's do a preventative measure. If you've ever given remote access, and you know you have, if your hands are not on the mouse and you see the mouse moving on your screen, then I'm going to recommend to anyone and everyone to take your device to a professional cleaning, you know, computer store to have it professionally cleaned and or wiped.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. And the fact is that 99% of us can't effectively clean our own devices from these types of things. I got to tell you one story. One time at the radio station, I was sitting at my computer during the show, and a big red screen popped up. Your Windows system, we have detected viruses on your Windows system. Call this number immediately. Well, A, I was running on a Chromebook, so the likelihood that my Windows system was infected was zero.
Zeros.
So, your advice, I turned it off. Left it in a Chromebook, you don't have to leave it off, but I left it off for a bit, turned it back on. Shockingly, everything came up. It was fine. And that's part of it. I have talked to people who had the Windows message pop up on their iPads, and they panicked. iPads don't run Windows. Microsoft doesn't do iPads. Microsoft doesn't do Chromebooks. Microsoft doesn't do Android phones. If you see those messages on any of those things, it is 110% a scam.
Nick, without doubt, I've had several clients, unfortunately, that have been victimized while using a Chromebook and or an iPad. Both have been hit. Some people say older adults are less tech savvy. And that is, you know, some of the reasons why some people are victimized, but not all. And not all older adults are less tech savvy. Some are very savvy. But those that are less than tech savvy, unfortunately, have been taken by the iPad or Chromebook tech scam. And, you know, When I'm seeing money being taken from people, it's upwards of, you know, $30,000-$40,000 is not unusual on these type of tech scams.
Yeah, it's really amazing that, and the idea is it's this giant red screen with these giant black letters, it designed to induce panic.
And they want the bells and the whistles. The bells, the whistles, the computers, screaming at you, so to speak, with, flashing lights and or flashing bells. And that is, they want a person to feel stress. And when a person is stressed and they're anxious, we are not thinking clearly. And we know this for a fact, that the human body does not react well to stress and anxiety. And that's when these scammers strike. And that is when they are certainly bilking lots of money out of our public.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I saw that, I said I was on a Chromebook. But when I saw that thing came up, my first reaction was panic. Then I read the screen and it said Microsoft. I went, yeah, okay, I get it now, yeah. But it's very seductive. They make it... they drag you in, they know what they're doing, and you get the bells and you get the noise and you get the flashing screen and you get the red and you get the big text and warning. And
Nick, they are going to absolutely be so savvy on the phone and professional that you think they're your best friend, and that they are genuinely coming across as helpful and friendly. And that is how people are, unfortunately, pulled in.
Yeah. Once they get you on the phone, the social engineering that keeps you there.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. These men and women that perform scams are pros. I don't care what your educational background is, Nick. People say to other people that have been victimized, "Oh, that man or woman, they must not be too bright." Wrong. That's absolutely wrong. These people are victimized by professionals. These men and women know how to defraud and victimize people. That's what they do for a living. Just like you do your job at the radio station here on Jazz 90.1. You're a pro. These people are also pros, and they know their job well.
Yep. There's a thing called cold reading, where you can find out things about people, right? Just by asking leading questions, just by being friendly, just by being open, and suddenly we've all seen TV shows where bad psychics, right? I'm sensing someone with a letter J. My Aunt Joan. Okay, boom, I got you now.
That's leading. A lead. There's so many leads, and they know how to do that. They certainly have the playbook, so to speak, and they have scripts that they utilize to take people on all these different types of scams. And since we got another minute or so left here, I would always recommend to someone to get a better understanding of tech scams. Go to this person's website. He's on YouTube. His first name is Jim. His last name is Browning, like the color, Brown, I-N-G. He's a scam baiter, and he texts scams with the best of them. And he is a professional. That's not his real name. No one knows what he looks like. So Google search YouTube, then type in Jim Browning. Watch some of Jim's videos to help educate yourself on tech scams and how these men and women operate. And you'll see he remotely accesses their computer by allowing them into his. He's got tech skills that far surpass me.
Yeah, I've watched any number of his videos, and I smile all the way through them. He does a very good job at that. He's scamming the scammers.
He and is.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he's on our side, Nick.
Yep. I've seen him break into phone calls and tell the person at the other end, "Ma'am, this is a scam. hang up the phone immediately. Do not go buy cards. Go, hang up right now. This is a scam. Just breaks right into the call.
And he is a professional, and we don't know where he's out of, but we certainly could get a lot of education out to people if they watched a couple of his videos, because he's specifically all about tech scams and certainly shows you how they operate.
Right. Well, Dan, this was delightful. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. We very much appreciate it. You did great. Thank you so much. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1.
Yes, it is Jazz 90.1. And we want to thank Dan Lyon for his insights. They're kind of amazing. We're very pleased that he was able to take time out from his very busy schedule to talk to us. He does a lot of talks to various groups of people, and if you're looking for him, then check him out at Lifespan. Very nice of him to do that. Very nice.
Yeah, because there's so many scams out there, and you know, you've heard us talk about it for a long time, folks. Is whether it's them just calling you up and saying that there's something wrong with your credit card, or you got to call this number. Or you get these emails and everything else, and you fall victim to that you wind up clicking on it, and all of a sudden you're locked into all this other stuff that they say, oh, yes, you agreed to it, see?
Right. All right, let me read this news item. In Microsoft news, it's a new month, so there's a new patch Tuesday. This one fixed 95 flaws, 4 of which were zero-day exploits. They covered everything from the kernel to Office to Edge to Defender to, you get the idea, pretty much everything. I mean, 95 flaws. If you're a Windows 10 user, you got a fix for printer bugs. And speaking of Windows 10, Microsoft has shut down the Windows 10 beta channel. Just another indication that support is ending forever. Tick, tick, people. Speaking of which, we reported last week that you could extend your Windows 10 support for one more precious year for $30. But this is Microsoft, and there's an alarming hint that a Windows 11 upgrade could be taken out of your hands. In confirming the deployment of patch KB5001716 to Windows 10 and Windows 11 PCs, Microsoft warned that when this update is installed, Windows may attempt to download and install feature updates to your device that if it is approaching or has reached the end of support for your currently installed Windows version. Feature updates offer new functionality and keep your device secure. We all know what that means. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible that today's auto-install feature update may become tomorrow's auto-installed upgrade, purely in the interest of your security, of course, citizen. That isn't the case yet, but Microsoft does warn that its advisory that after this update, and I quote, Windows may periodically display a notification informing you of problems that may prevent Windows Update from keeping your device up to date and protecting against current threats, end quote. So at the very least, Nagware. Microsoft has been quietly installing this update on both Windows 11 and 10 systems after October's patch Tuesday. Microsoft notes the Windows 11 update may also be forced on your PC eventually, as we see happening where any given version of Windows 10 or 11 runs out of road and is no longer supported for further upgrades. Again, please disabuse yourself of the notion that you own your own Windows computer or have any say in what goes on with it. Excited about having no say in your computer's upgrade? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
And that's where anybody that has an old computer sitting down in the basement or up in the attic gathering dust should grab it and download a copy of Linux and start playing around with it.
Or even Chrome OS Flex, which might be a little easier for novice users.
Chrome OS Flex is something. And by the way, with Chrome OS and Chrome OS Flex, both products, you get 3 months of Gemini Advanced for free. It's their ChatGPT equivalent, does all kinds of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And you get 3 months free. And what's really cool about that is Microsoft, what's their name? Google, has promised that Chrome OS and Chrome OS Flex would walk in lockstep, and this proves that they're doing that. That it, both Chrome OS and Chrome OS Flex are getting Gemini Advanced. Chrome OS Flex essentially turns an old computer into a Chromebook. If you don't want, if you're a little leery of the full Linux experience, you shouldn't be. But if you are, that's kind of understandable. So you can use Chrome OS Flex and turn it into a Chromebook instead. And again, as we've said many times, if everything you do is in the browser, you only need a Chromebook. Mm-hmm. So if you do, you know, if everything you do is browsing and checking your web-based email and maybe doing a few documents here and there in Google Docs or OneDrive or whatever they're calling it this week or whatever Apple's calling theirs this week, you can easily do all of those things on a Chromebook or Chrome OS Flex. Just because it comes from Google doesn't mean that you can't access a Microsoft product or an Apple product online. Anything you can do online, you can do on those. And if you have a real Chromebook, you can also run Android apps. So if you have a specific Android app that you like to run, again, it has to be in, you know, if your Chromebook has gone out of service, you can no longer run Android apps. But as long as your Chromebook is in service, you can run Android apps as well as the Chrome stuff in the browser. And oh, by the way, if your Chromebook is beefy enough, you can run Linux. And Chrome OS Flex is Linux. So if you want to play around in that, you have that ability. But you know, if you've got an old laptop, Chrome OS Flex or real Linux is a great way to revive that product. You spend a little time learning how to use a new operating system. It's not that hard. They all do exactly the same thing. They show windows and folders and documents and use the mouse to move things around. They're all the same thing.
And that's why it'd be a good idea to do that now before you're all of a sudden thrown in a panic. That, you know, all of a sudden your Windows machine is not going to work unless you start coughing up the $30 a year.
No, Microsoft. No. $30 is 1 year only.
Yeah.
Only 1 year. You cannot renew it. At the end of that year, you'll have to buy Windows 11.
Yeah, but what if the machine, that's where I think they, and again, this is just my personal opinion, because it's a moneymaker, because they say 1 year right now, but for anybody's machine that won't upgrade to Windows 11, and they say, well, you know, all right, another $30. So if they do a $30.
That would be great. I'm not planning on it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell people to plan on it.
Oh, no, you
because
can't.
Microsoft wants you to buy a new machine.
Yeah. But
that's what they want you to do. They want you running Windows 11.
Oh, I know it. Yeah. And a lot of folks, though, right now, just don't have the bucks to go out and, you know.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you just the other problem is, which I've been saying for a long time, is you just can't go out to the stores now and see the big boxes. You're either a tablet, a laptop, or your phone.
I've seen a couple all-in-ones, which are kind of nice.
Yeah, but yeah. Not many of them around most of the stores.
Not a lot of towers or even the pizza boxes.
Yeah. Yep. There's stuff you got to do online, and then you got to know what the hell you're buying as far as specs.
And that's sort of what an all-in-one is. They take a laptop motherboard, which is tiny, and stick it behind the LCD panel, and there's an all-in-one for you.
That's exactly right. The real problem with all of those is I can't add things to it. So in my desktop, which is a tower, I have two hard drives. One gigabyte hard drive, which has the operating system on it, and one 2 gigabyte hard drive, terabyte hard drive.
I
have Enright disease.
Thank you.
One terabyte drive that's the server, that's the operating system, and one 2 terabyte drive that's the that's my home directory. And so, you know, I can add things to it. I can add modems. I can add all kinds of things to it. That are not available to do easily on a laptop.
Although you are a minority.
I am a minority. I admit that. I admit that.
I just look up a stat counter. Windows 7 still has a 2.6% market share.
Yes, and that's making Microsoft crazy. They made a good product and now can't oversell it.
Windows 10 is at 60%. Windows 11 is at 35%.
Only 35%, which is still, you know, millions and millions of people. But it's not enough for Microsoft. So they're going to force the Windows 10 people. The Windows 7 people are a lost cause. If you're running Windows 7, they're just like, go ahead.
Windows XP is 0.2%.
Yep.
All those ATMs that are still running XP.
That's exactly
you ever come
right.
up to an ATM that has the Windows XP, you know, either kernel panic or it's not safe to shut down your computer?
Right. All right. That's it. We are done for another week. I'm reminding you, that you all you lounge lizards, that we will be back Sunday night, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in the lounge. If you go to soundbites.org/lounge. You will see that link there once I put it up later this afternoon. If you are an Ask Nick user, if you go to asknick.com/members, you'll see the link there when I put it up this afternoon. We'll be delighted to chat with you online from 9 to 10 p.m. tomorrow night or 9 to 10 p.m. Wednesday night. But that's it for us for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank those of you who called in. I want to thank Dan Lyon of Lifespan. It was great to talk to him again. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?